solidarity, baby. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And it really is the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, okay? Dig this. My missus, and it's going to be our six-year anniversary tomorrow, and it's my mum's birthday tonight. I'm going to go over and, you know, do the sun thing and whatever. What was I going to say? I forgot. All right. Anyway, we're talking about methodologies and the methodology of scumbaggery. When I look at any institution, and it's become almost patently that black and white, almost any institution now that you see, some kind of sociopath at the top, couple of proto-sociopaths under him that pass down his orders to the dumbass minions down the bottom. So you've got a society run exactly like that, because every single institution follows that very similar structure and methodology. So that way, you have the worst ideas of crazy psychos becoming government policy, financial policy, religious policy, whatever policy, okay? This is what produces it. And I am not 100% sure exactly solve each and every issue, but the truth movement in itself, I find, solves that problem on its own, because you have a look at all these different fields of eclectic conspiratorial research, guys. And what I found is, for every one particular issue, even if it's incredibly cryptic and nobody knows about it, there is always at least one guy who knows everything about it and what have you. But maybe people don't know who that person is. What I think, and I think, Joe, you kind of put this point forward earlier, and wholeheartedly with you on it, is that you need to share resources and give all these different people coverage. Now, I've been criticized because I claim that I don't have any credibility, and I don't do research on my guests before having them on. And apparently, if I do, and I don't challenge my guests either, like if they say something that I don't believe in or I think it sounds crazy, I'm just like, okay, it's your opinion. And I don't kind of challenge people on the show or whatever. It's not an adversarial show. I mean, you'd be more accurate to think of me as kind of like a truther prostitute. Okay, I proselytize for all the different people in the truth movement, and just like a hooker, I ain't picky. Okay, I set the bar really low. If you are a listener to the show and you want to see me interview someone, you're my boss. That person's email, I get them on the show, just like has done with 99.999% of these guests that we have on the show every day. No idea who they are, but you do, the listeners. And so that is the methodology that I follow. If you keep listening to many different voices that you maybe have never heard before, are unfamiliar with, you then gain perspective, and through gaining perspective, you gain discernment. Because if you rely on your radio show host of choice to be your sole source of information, your sole source of intellectual discernment, then you are killing yourself intellectually. You are not allowing yourself the capacity to think and discern for yourself, and you will simply be a truth slave rather than a sleeping slave. You know, it's no point. Wake up and listen to more people if you can. Sorry, guys, for going on that little rant. We have Freda X joining us now. Well, Freda, welcome.
Hey, I was just going to say, I think I recall you coming on my show and giving me grief about not letting the guest talk, doing exactly what you just did. Just for the record, anyway, I wanted to put that on. I'm just going to sit out there. But no, I'm really excited to be here. I am a big fan of Mr. Atwell here. I really he's come upon, I think, an amazing thesis. His work is really exciting, very intriguing. I have really enjoyed your interviews with Jan Ervin over at Gnostic Media. Wow, great job, sir. Really excellent work.
Oh, thank you.
And I'll tell you, I I want to just make a shout out right away to the Confederacy of Anons in the chat realm out there, keeping us all humble. Thank you guys, everybody out there. You're awesome. But anyways, back to the point. Boy, I tell you, I was saying to Joe here when we were waiting for the show to come back on during the break that, you know, I experienced, I think, a similar background coming up, you know, being a believer. I was a Christian. I was first a Catholic until I was 18, and then I joined a non-denominational church that lived according to the book of Acts. Basically, by all accounts, you'd call it a cult. It was a small church where they were really just, you know, I realized after a couple of years of being associated with them that it was a thought-stopping system of mind control. And then I was troubled, though, because I had faith, you know, that was sort of woven up with emotions, and I felt the crisis of the condemnation of my peers when I decided to announce I was leaving the church, you know, and they left me as a young man, you know. Feeling walking around thinking I was damned for a few years and really acting like, well, hell, if you can't lower heaven, then raise hell. You might as well, you know, do whatever you want because you're damned already, you know. And I led a very self-destructive path for a while because of it. But then my intellect kicked in and I studied and I learned and I read books like one of the first books that really woke me up was by a man named Holder Kirsten, who did a lot of Shroud Turin work. He wrote a book called The Jesus Conspiracy and another one called Jesus Lived in India. And when I found out there was a whole wealth of information about traditions about Jesus all over the world, I was like, wait a second, what is this? And so, yeah, you know, I started to, you know, formulate what I believe is the same thesis, only, you know, with slight variations. You've got some very original ideas, Joe. I wouldn't want to take those away from you. But I you know, the big picture about what we're dealing with here, that I always assumed that Paul was a character in this. You postulate he was also fictitious, correct?
Yeah, there were three really significant miracle-working Jews of the era, Flavius Josephus, the character Jesus Christ, and Paul. And all of them are, you know, have a very pro-Roman perspective in their theology and worldview. And so just out of hand, you can almost certainly realize that they're, because this just wasn't going on in the messianic movement of the time. The messianic movement of the first century was militaristic, xenophobic, and waged war against Rome. It wasn't this Christian image that appears in the Gospels and in Paul's writing. So, you know, I think that you know, they have been sort of ossified over the years, and people now, you know, they think of Paul or Jesus just as, you know, as real as members of their families, but it really can't stand any scrutiny. These are fictional characters.
Yeah, you know, and of course, thank the Lord for the Dead Sea Scrolls, right, and the light that it brings to everyone. Every Christian listening to this radio show right now, you need to go out and buy yourself a copy of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi Fragments, the Nag Hammadi Library, and read, just read, you know, versions of the Bible that weren't contaminated, at least, you know, I'm sure they were contaminated when they got into those book form there, but less contaminated, let's say, than the material we know as the Holy Canon, the Bible. But also, yeah, it's interesting the three men you bring up, because two of those men claimed to be Flavians, didn't they?
Well, Flavius Josephus claimed to be a Flavian. Paul had
many claimed to be he claimed to be a Herod, didn't he?
That claim comes from a passage which, in one of his letters, he talks to an individual who is of the family of Herod, and he calls him my kinsman. And so, from that, a number of people have deduced that the character, you know, was from the Herod family, which was very much entwined with the Flavian family.
Sure.
So that was the that's kind of the general connection that Paul has to the Flavian.
So are you proposing, I haven't finished your book, but are you proposing that Josephus was also a fictional character?
Sure. If you just look at the attributes that he claims for himself, I mean, just to list a few, you know, he was a child prodigy. He was a member of all three sects of the Jews at the time. He was a general for the rebellion against the Romans. Then he was captured by these, and at which point he had a communication with God, who told him that the covenant between the Jews and God was broken, and now the covenant would exist between the Romans and the Jews. So he then has these prophecies about Vespasian becoming Caesar. This isn't a real character. What you have, actually, if you just sort of take the aspects of the individual part, what you see is that whoever created the character was just deliberately producing an individual who would have so much essentially credibility in terms of understanding the era that no one could cast doubt on the history he was writing. In other words, the history he was producing was propaganda, and the people who wanted the propaganda to be taken seriously created an author that was simply beyond criticism. No human would have all of the attributes that Josephus claimed for himself.
You know, I just always considered him a liar.
One thing that's believable about
him. Well, it wouldn't be the first time that a liar became a big religious figure, would it?
Or historian, for that matter.
Yeah, the Gospels and the histories of Josephus are actually a unified body of literature. They both come from the same literary team. It wasn't one individual. And they used nom de plumes because they wanted the literature to be more realistic. I mean, once the character Jesus Christ is completely understood as fictional, then Josephus and Paul, they've just become very easy to identify as fictional characters.
Okay, so let me ask you just another question, if I could. Sure. Why do you think that the Maccabees were removed from the Protestant Bible and not removed from the Catholic one?
You know, I don't know. That's a very good question. I've always kind of wondered about the whole Maccabean literature. It's very mysterious. I really don't have any understanding of that. I know that the Maccabees were essentially in back of the organization that Rome was fighting against.
And Greece, Greece before them, right?
And Greece before them, yeah. So you have this very long-standing struggle between the Greco-Roman world and this particular movement by a family, and the family claimed to be a messianic family. And so, I'm able to decode the Gospels very, very well, and also the Pauline material in Revelation. In the next book, I show what all that stuff is. That's very easy for me to understand. The Maccabean literature is very complicated. I would go back to a point you made earlier. Just the best way to understand that is to read the Dead Sea Scrolls, because then you're reading the straight dope. You're reading the autobiographical information, and you're seeing the real-time, messianic movement. And what they believed. And so if you read that stuff, that would be, where I'd begin to try to understand the current Maccabean literature.
And did you know that Mel Gibson was supposedly working on a new movie about the Maccabees?
I did. And in fact, I actually ran into Mel Gibson about 2 months ago. I mean, physically. he had his daughter on his shoulders, and he was at a beach club that I belonged to, and I was exercising. I came out the door, and he bumped into me. The daughter almost fell. He turned around, and I was astounded to see it was Mel Gibson. We didn't exchange words, but I'm hoping that he'll put me in the movie.
I don't want to capitalize on this whole show. This is Vinny's show, but I just had one more question, and then I'll shut up. I'm sorry, but and I'd love to have you come on my show, which
Happy
is the Middle
anytime.
Chamber on this network. And I know that Sonic, who's in the chat room right now, would love to have you come on Type 1 Radio Lounge as well.
Yeah. Great,
but
great.
My question is, are you familiar with the works of Zachariah Sitchin? And also, are you familiar with the works of John Lamb Lash, who wrote a book called Not in His Image?
Yes.
An analysis of the Nag Hammadi Library. And I would like to know your thoughts on his thesis.
Wow. I would have a very complicated, nuanced response. In general, I tend to agree with it.
Okay, so, yeah, so
I think the Nag Hammadis, they're just fascinating, particularly in light of the analysis that I do in part of what the original Gospels are, because Nag Hammadi seems in some ways to be a kind of reaction against the authoritative structure that the Gospels represent. And
And so how about the archons and the depiction of the archons within? What do you think about that?
Oh, man. I have opinions, but I just don't have enough real detail to give anything of value to the audience. okay. I don't mean to be circumspect, but because of my position in the Gospels and how focused it is how narrowly, sort of concentrated, I'm often asked to try to go broader in other areas of Christian scholarship and of historical. Kind of feel it's just not my place. I mean, I have a narrow, clearly defined area, and I just sort of reside my analysis there. I even try to stay away from esoteric sort of interpretations of the Gospels. If you've read Caesar's Messiah, the first part of it, you know that I have a very narrow range of understanding that has to do with a clear linkage, a typologic linkage between the Gospels and the history that Flavian Josephus wrote. So basically, the ministry of Jesus was based upon the military campaign of Titus Flavius. And all of these events in the Gospels, they essentially look forward to Titus's campaign. It was a way that the Flavians could essentially become the Christ of the Jews, because the character in the Gospels that Jesus predicts, who he refers to as the Son of Man, who's going to come and they're going to have this destruction of the Galilean towns and Jerusalem will be encircled, the temple buildings be razed. That is the reason for the Gospels writing, is that Titus Flavius actually ends up being this character that Jesus predicts coming.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We're going to get the same old moldy tyranny that we've had before if we think that the next one is going to be a different Flavian. They're not the same Flavian. We'll be right back after the break at thevideoswitchshow.com.